All right. So now what?
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Well, here we are. Okay, you talk.
Whatever.
That's it. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Oh, wait till you hear this one.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Well, how are you today? Welcome to the program. I feel like this should be Hurricane Central. I mean, everybody's talking about hurricanes. Harvey and Jose and Irma and Maria and God, sounds like the choir at the church down the street. What's going on with these things? It's always another tropical something or a hurricane something or flooding or no, it's awful. What's going on? What's going on? Yesterday at the United Nations president, and I use that term loosely, Trump, actually addressed the United Nations, the very place that he poo-pooed and said the organization is not worthwhile, is ineffective, also wanted to replace the tiles on the wall. He actually did. Said this a while ago. I don't understand if he's a president or doing a home decorating reality show. I can't figure this guy out anymore. Anyway, he gave a pretty decent speech to the United Nations, and it actually sounded like he wanted all countries to come together and fight against evil. That was a pretty good speech, and also very, very standard. That's what most presidents say in front of the United Nations representatives. They say the same thing. So he was almost presidential until he called the leader of North Korea Rocket Man. You know, that's not really much presidential stuff going on when you start calling people names who have nuclear weapons. There's probably nothing wrong with it. It's probably fitting. But at the same time, to stand up in front of the world, in front of the United Nations, and call a crazy guy with nuclear weapons, start calling him schoolyard bully names, it just may not be the best idea. Again, very accurate, but not necessary to say like that. I don't understand what Trump's upbringing was. Was he born in a schoolyard? I mean, what's his deal? What's his deal? If I could tweak anything into your face, Donald, I would try to act like a mature human being for a change. Now we're going to have a war against two children, Kim and Don. We don't need that. We don't need the possibility of problems. Trump also used the phrase that we will annihilate North Korea if we have to. Annihilate is, it's a phrase that should only be used by a crazy person. You don't ever use the phrase annihilate. And I think what Trump was trying to do was to scare the bejesus out of a kid who doesn't get scared. And that kid has nuclear weapons. Now, granted, we do as well, but we tend not to use them. We'll use them once, okay, right. Tend not to use them. This other guy, he could use them. or he could sell them to a terrorist group in order to raise a large amount of money. See, that's the problem. When you place sanctions on North Korea and you start choking them at the economic throat and they run out of money, the way they can make a fortune is for somebody to pay them for the nuclear weapons, like a terrorist group. That's scarier than Kim using it himself. Kim might be a little calculating. The terrorist groups, they're on a suicide mission. So that's pretty scary. So Trump does need to trump this thing up. I agree with him. He didn't say anything wrong. The way he said it was childish and inane and perhaps provocative in a provocational sense. Don, go the route of diplomacy and shut your freaking mouth for once. And don't ever say the word annihilate again. You're not in a schoolyard. You're in reality. Anyway, hi, welcome to the program. Thank you for letting me spout off like that. You can spout as well if you'd like, but you don't happen to have a radio show. So that's too bad. Hey, how are you? Are you doing all right? Seriously? Stay healthy, man. I did an interview yesterday with a woman, a woman doctor, and she said, man, take your multivitamins, will you? I mean, she wasn't saying that to me personally. But she said, take the damn multivitamins. What's your problem? What's a problem with you people? She didn't say it that way. But that was the message. The hell's a problem with you? You go to a drugstore, you buy multivitamins, you take one a day. What's a problem with that? What's a problem with you? And I got to admit, when I was a young adult, I didn't take anything. Well, I did take some drugs, but they weren't over the counter. Pop a vitamin, man. What can it hurt? Some people don't believe in multivitamins. I got to tell you, they're not going to hurt you. They're not. Nobody died of multivitamins once a day. It's very, very sad. Passed away at the age of 60. That's very early. What do you think it was? Multivitamins. Took one every day. It's very sad. Very, very sad. Very sad. And that just doesn't happen like that. The leaves are starting to come off the trees. It's a little bit depressing for me. Fall is my favorite season because it's there's no more bugs, first of all. The ants are dead. Mosquitoes, I haven't seen any in a while now. It's not so bad up here in the Northeast where I reside, except for this hurricane stuff. And then there was a gigantic earthquake. I believe it was a 7.1. Which, you know, I got to tell you something. You don't understand. With earthquakes and with the hurricanes, it's not like just one notch up when it's like 7.1 and then 7.2, 7.3. Each little decimal represents like a doubling. It's more consequential than it sounds like. And in the Mexico City area this time, hundreds of people have perished because buildings have actually toppled. That's how strong this quake was. It's one thing to have a quake in areas where people don't live. You're going to have fatalities, but it's going to be because the hut fell down. And I don't mean that in a disparaging sense, it's just the case. When you're in a city situation, that magnitude quake becomes deadly. And the infrastructure just crumbles. And some of the pictures out of Mexico City are just incredibly alarming. One might say to themselves, what's going on? Earthquakes, hurricanes, Trump. I mean, like, what's going on? That's why I'm saying, man, take your multivitamin. Okay. I'm sorry. Do you take your multivitamin? If you don't, you're going to get sick. Oh! Yeah, and get a flu shot as well, because, again, you know, people say, well, the flu shot, that's injecting a sample of the flu into me, and I'm getting the flu, isn't it? Yeah, but it's like so minute that you're being stupid. Get a flu shot. And you know, oh, Ron, I don't like to inject things into my body. Really? Do you like to sit around with the flu? And then it's not just the flu, it's the complications from other medical problems you may have that can compound because you have the flu. You know, man, just do it and shut up. Oh, that's going to be my motto. I'm going to put it on a t-shirt. Hey, there's a new item, my t-shirt. I'm going to put it on my t-shirt. Just take it and shut up. Just please be quiet, man. Just please be quiet.
Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet. Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Hey, just to switch subjects for a second, or for whatever long it takes. I don't know how old you are. I have no idea. Some of my listeners are seniors, both in high school and in life. And others are mere fetuses, I have a feeling. So I don't really know. I have no idea. I can't see you. I wish I could. I wish this was a two-way thing where I could just shut up and you could talk to me for like 45 minutes. That would be wonderful. As a matter of fact, let's do that. You talk, I'll shut up. Go on, go. Huh? You got nothing to say? Well, this is awkward. When I was growing up, zoos were animals in cages. That was it. And I always thought that was a bit cruel. And now, quote-unquote, zoos are what they call habitats. And you see the animals that you usually don't see in everyday life. You see them roaming a pasture or something like that. They can move around. They're free range, so to speak, like chickens. And I appreciate it because I love animals. And to be honest with you, between you and me, sometimes I love animals more than people. And I think you agree with me. I have a feeling you do. Animals are great. I've had four dogs at once. I love animals. And I'm telling you, I don't remember any point in my life where a human being crawled up on the couch, sat in my lap, and started licking me. That's love. That's love. Unconditional love, too. I could have just yelled at the dog for pooping in the house. 30 seconds later, dog sitting in my lap, licking my face. I mean, seriously? That's love. That's love. Anyway, there was a show on television called The Wild Kingdom. And many of you don't remember the show because I don't believe it's on the air anymore. And there were zoos that used to visit talk shows. And it was great. Wild Kingdom was really the first animal to human being television experience where we learned about the animal and learned to care about the animal. And it was great. This gentleman that we're going to speak to right now was behind all of that. He's been working with animals all of his life and with the program Wild Kingdom. And many of the television personalities that you saw on talk shows that were bringing on animals were a result of this particular gentleman. So let's talk to him right now because he's pretty cool. He's a cool guy. I like cool guys.
Hey, Ron, how are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you very much for being with us. Peter Gross is here. He is he's an animal lover. He's been doing this forever, not to make you too old here, but Peter was director of land animals at Marine World, Africa, USA, near San Francisco. And then, of course, Wild Kingdom ambassador and on television with all the big ones, all the talk shows, Carson, the whole bit, and You know, I love speaking to you because you and I have the same philosophy about life, is that animals are just a part of this whole experience, and we need to respect them and care for them. And I have a bird sanctuary in my backyard. I mean, I just love it. So thank you for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, and congratulations on having your bird sanctuary. There's nothing like having a little nature right in your backyard when you look out your window.
It's amazing how there is a lot of nature in the backyard, sometimes because of a negative reason, where we're kind of taking the land from the wild animals, and they have no choice but to show up in our backyards.
Well, you know, it's true, and an awful lot of it has to do with the appreciation of nature. We like to move out and be close to nature, and I think the trick that we seem to be doing a better job at establishing now is to have a balance, and we seem to be establishing more contiguous green belts for wildlife, and we're developing an appreciation of the importance of having nature and wild places in our lives, I think, to give us that balance that we need so badly.
Yeah. What an appreciation you must have, though, because you actually went to places that people don't go to, and with the documentaries and so prolific in that sense, going on their habitat. That must have been incredible for you.
It was. I was very fortunate to spend the first part of my career developing free-roaming endangered species programs. And then later on, when I joined Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom with Jim Fowler, which was a show that so many of us were raised upon watching Sunday afternoon, and then was able to travel around the world filming wildlife and then bringing the stories back and sharing that information with the American public. And what I'm doing now is taking that information and clips and bloopers and some of the films that we've done over the years and sharing those with universities and theaters and performing arts centers. And bottom line is I'm trying to affect young people's attitudes about the natural world and give them some good news about the good things that are happening in their environment.
When I was a little child back in 1627, when you went to a zoo, You saw cages. You saw animals in cement, on cement, in very small enclosures. The Central Park Zoo, for example. I mean, that's where I went as a child. Now it's more like visiting their own habitat with these large sprawling pieces of land. I guess we've come a long way in that sense.
We really have. In the old days, zoos used to be sort of a collection or a menagerie, sort of a stamp collection of as many animals as one could squeeze in. Over the years, zoos have made this nice transition into education centers, and as you described so well, the habitats have become much more natural. In some cases, we actually cage the people in river rafts or in trams, and the animals roam free and loose, and you get to see them in a semi-natural environment. Many of the zoos now have enrichment programs where the animals hunt and find their food, and it keeps them mentally stimulated. And it's a great place for children who can't go to the wild, and many people can't experience them, to make their first real connection and sort of set the hook of meeting wildlife up close and personal.
And it gives children an appreciation for wildlife, which is important.
Yes, indeed.
So what can we do to make the world a better place for animals and appreciation?
Well, I think probably the most important thing we can do now is help create a balance for young people. I think that children are spending much too much time staring at screens. Today's technology and devices like video games has really got them inside more often staring at these screens. I don't think they're spending enough time in the great outdoors in nature. I like to think of it as a lot of today's young people have a nature deficit disorder. So it's our responsibility as adults to get them out and take them hiking and backpacking and camping and kayaking. And you are so lucky in the part of the world where you live, you have so many beautiful parks nearby. That it's easy to take them out and have them stand next to a stream or a waterfall, or just to walk through the woods, mm-hmm. creates this wonderful balance in life and appreciation for nature and wildlife.
Yeah. I guess we're kind of fortunate in this country, although I still think we're pretty backward in many senses, but there are other countries in the world where there is great mistreatment and disrespect.
Well, I think there are places around the world that aren't as fortunate as we are here. And some of the solutions for countries that are having problems with nature and wildlife are starting to get on board with ecotourism, which is one of the fastest growing forms of travel. So if there's a section of rainforest, say, in South America and Central America, they figured out that rather than selling the land type for a one-time timbering project, that tourists will come for years and years and years to see the forest and experience the wildlife and take pictures and come back and stay in hotels and need guides, and this ecotourism is creating jobs. So for many of the less fortunate countries, I think that ecotourism creates an incentive to preserve wildlife and wild lands. It's sort of a tough pill to swallow, but in nature, if it doesn't pay, it doesn't stay. So this ecotourism and people's concern and wanting to see wildlife in faraway places has really become quite helpful.
It's an interesting conundrum because we're friendly to the many species of animals, and we domesticate them, and that's not really what they were. It gets kind of confusing. I understand that in your home, you actually have a visitor or had a visitor for quite a period of time.
Well, it's interesting. Some of the zoos and parks and captive animals are well taken care of by their parents, and just like in the wild, many of them, especially for the firstborn, they don't know how and can't take care of them, so they have to be bottle raised.
Right.
So I had a young tiger that I had to bring home when it was small to bottle raise, and it drank every 4 hours, and it became imprinted and attached. It's called imprinting. The first thing they see is what they think is a parent. Some of these outreach programs that nature and science centers have with the wildlife are imprinted animals, or in many cases, rescued animals that come in with a broken wing or hit by a car or something has happened. And through their care, they associate people with food and a bond develops, and they're very comfortable in sort of their people environment, so they become ambassadors for their species, so to speak, and become part of education programs. So it's unfortunate in a sense that, yes, indeed, they become slightly domesticated, although I always think of them all as still very much wild animals. Yeah. They all have wild instincts.
Right.
But on the other hand, these ambassadors for their species on a stage or in the classroom situation can really make the connection, make young people care, and become concerned about our natural world.
I agree with you. It's very important for children, especially, to start the appreciation early, because that carries the rest of your life, which you go through childhood usually. And there are zoos and parks and outdoor locations, as you alluded to, rather than playing video games. But what can one do around just their own home, for example, to keep children interested in their very backyard?
Well, the interesting thing is it's a sort of a misconception that it takes a lot of money to really do something to affect conservation. And you can make a difference locally just by not being wasteful, sort of leaving a small print, sharing rides when you go places, ride your bike, hike there. Today's generation, it's very in to be green. So if you want to be a volunteer at a nature center, it feels
fun.
Good to volunteer. You can help do replanting projects and gardens and beach cleanups, volunteer at zoos and science centers and botanical gardens. There's so many places, if you just see what's going on locally, that have teen programs and older who can come and volunteer. And it also gives people sort of a sense of maybe the career they might want to have if they find that they have sort of a draw to become more involved with nature and might want to do something, a career that reflects conservation.
Great. How do we get more information about this subject?
Well, you can certainly reach me simply by going to petergross.com. And then go online and look at your conservation organizations that are local nearby. There's so many that are doing so many good things, especially on the coast. And then, of course, go to the library and look things up and talk to your counselor. And I would say a good place to start is the Nature Science Center and, of course, the local zoo.
Wonderful. PeterGross.com, that's G-R-O-S, am I correct? Yes.
That's right.
Okay,
very good.
Very good. Thank you so much for what you do. I don't know if you even realize it, but the imprint that you've put on many of us in this generation is extraordinary, and I thank you for that, and it's a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much, Ron. Nice talking to you as well.
Take care. Bye-bye.
What a guy. What a guy. Nice guy, huh? Nice guy.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
I'm not really grumpy. Yeah, I guess I am. I've been told by so many people that I'm grumpy. Stop being so grumpy. Ron, you should smile more often. Why, if I'm grumpy, would I smile? But I'm really a very loving, caring individual. But I'm grumpy and I don't smile. Hey, do you have money? No, none of us do. So we try to invest, and you know, you can't invest unless you have money, so it's kind of a catch 57. Or is that the Heinz thing? I get confused with these number analogies. There's a thing called a 401k, which I thought was how you rate a diamond or jewelry, but apparently it's an investment tool. I know a little bit about investment. I've invested during my life at various junctures. But since the 2007-2008 debacle of finances with the banks and all that crap, and the country almost going under because of the mortgage scams and all that, we haven't been able to save anything since then. Nothing's returned since then, and it may not ever. People don't invest as much because they're scared about losing their money. It's the same kind of effect that the Depression had on people, because we came close to a depression. It was probably one of the deepest recessions we've ever had since the Depression itself. And believe me, if you had a lot of money involved, there was depression. You were not happy. You were depressed. So there's a world of 401ks. And financial experts say, you know, you can really have these little investment saving things going on. Well, I don't think everybody can, but perhaps so. I really don't know. So I turn to the expert as I usually do. Because I at my fingertips, I do have one thing going for me. I have every expert in every field available to me. So let's check this out. Hello, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much. Sarah Holden is Senior Director, Retirement and Investor Research at the Investment Company Institute. And we're talking about 401ks. You know, I are there 402s and 403s and 404s and 407s?
Well, there are a few different numbers. The main one, though, is the 401k plan, and tomorrow is 401k day, so it's a good day to sort of learn about those plans and take stock. But you might also be in something called a 403b or a 457, so there are a few different flavors.
Okay, but we don't talk about the 401ks are the big things, and we kind of know what they are. And this is the time to reevaluate.
Yeah, so tomorrow is 401k day, and if you're already in a plan, today might be a day to go online and take a look at your account balance, your investment options, make sure that you're taking full advantage of your plan. If you're not already in a plan, you might want to find out if your employer has one, and if your employer doesn't have one, you could look into an IRA as well.
Is it for an employer to offer 401ks, or must the employee ask for it usually?
So the employer, it'll be part of the benefit package. So when you're looking for a new job or changing jobs, one of the things they'll often mention is that they've got a retirement plan, and it could be a 401k. And if they have a retirement plan, you want to be sure, first thing, that you're participating in it. So step one is make sure you're in. The next thing you want to do is make sure that you take full advantage of what the employer is offering you, because the employer may put money into your account. And it often happens because you've put money in. So it's known as a matching contribution.
Yes.
And if you don't take full advantage of that, you've really left some money on the table.
Okay. So do 401k plans fluctuate in their interest? And if they do, is it something we just watch? We can't do anything about that, can we?
So in the 401k, after you've decided to contribute, your next step is deciding how you're going to invest. On average, there's more than 20 choices, so it covers a full range of stocks and bonds and international and domestic investments. And so what you want to do is you can decide among those, or if you're someone who sort of says, you know what, I'm going to let an investment professional do this, you could choose the target date fund. And the target date fund will be diversified and will rebalance for you. And what's important to remember, as the stock market goes up and down, you're just buying into it little by little, paycheck by paycheck.
Okay. So it's you that decides what funds are involved as opposed to the company's 401k setup. In other words, there are things that you can do in choice of investments?
Yeah, so the plan will have a range of options, on average more than 20, so there's a full range of choice, and then you get to pick from among those options, and there's usually something like a target date fund, and a target date fund, basically you decide, well, at what age am I going to retire, and you pick a fund that has the date for that year, and that fund will be in a lot of equity when you're younger, and as you get older and you approach retirement age, it'll be rebalancing over time to get more focused on income as you enter into retirement.
Okay. Sarah, out of all due respect, most people don't know what you're talking about. They have absolutely no idea what investing is. They know that the company offers this, and they say, what do you think is the best? And that's about as far as it goes. So how does a layperson inform themselves to make decisions like this?
Well, the plan will have a website typically, so you could go online and take a look to see all the education materials. Typically, they'll have a representative come in to talk about the plan to the employees, or you could go to your HR department and they could explain it to you.
Important.
But I think the key to remember really is that it's very simple in terms of decide to get in, be sure to get in.
Yes.
And again, if you don't want to do all that investing, you can pick the target date fund, which will do it for you, it will rebalance for you.
Okay, which is what probably most people do because they don't understand, so they go with that. Okay, so what we're doing, we're actually playing the stock market when we're doing this, aren't we?
You're going into the stock market little by little, paycheck by paycheck, and so you're able to, when the stock market's down, you're buying low.
Yep.
When it goes back up, you're riding it back up again, and you're accumulating this nest egg for retirement. This is a long-term project that you'll be doing this over your career.
Right. How does that work when you get to the end game? Are there taxes due on what you've accumulated? Does that happen on an annual basis when you do your taxes, or is that only handled when you cash out?
Yeah, so the typical pattern of investing is you don't pay taxes on the money as you put it in. It grows and compounds without any taxes being paid on it while it's in the plan. And then when you reach retirement and you start taking the money out, so it's only when you start taking the money out, the money that you take out is now counted as part of your income because you're now getting it in retirement.
Okay.
And that's when you pay the taxes on it.
Okay. And that's what is different from a 401k than regular investing. When you regularly invest, you annually have to report that income. Is that right?
That's right. So if you were investing just in a taxable account, if you were just buying stock, you would be paying taxes on the dividends you're getting. You'd be paying taxes on any capital gains if you were to sell it. Whereas in the 401k plan, all of that just stays in the plan, gets to be reinvested, gets to grow, and it's not until you actually start taking money out of the plan that you pay taxes on it.
So what if you change jobs and you've been with the company for a while and you've accumulated some and then you go to a new company? Are we starting from scratch again?
So with the 401k, when you change jobs, you may be able to leave it behind at your current, at your previous employer if you like that plan.
Right.
The new plan may accept money, and if you don't have either of those choices, you could always roll it over into an IRA, and many folks choose to do that because, as you've noted, I could be changing jobs, I could have several accounts, and the IRA would be a place where I could accumulate them all together and keep track of them.
Okay, and an IRA is similar in the sense that you don't pay taxes until you actually start withdrawing. Is that correct?
Yes. So the IRA preserves the tax treatment of the money, gives you a place where you can consolidate all those accounts from your various jobs over your career, and then you can manage it into retirement from there.
Now, I know in an actual IRA, you, when you contribute annually, you can use that as a tax deduction. Is that the same with 401k?
Yeah, so the 401k, it's pre-tax money, so you're not paying taxes on the contributions as they go in. So you get the tax savings immediately, you get the tax savings as it's reinvesting and growing, and it's not until you take the money out that you pay any taxes on it.
So when people say that I'd like to get into the stock market and they have 401ks, they really are in the stock market. They're not even understanding that, I guess, huh?
They are typically in the stock market, and when we survey folks who have 401k plans, they actually understand that they're going into the stock market just a little bit at a time, so they're not as worried about the fluctuations in the stock market, and they're typically in it for the long haul.
Good. Okay. Well, where do we get more information? Because there's probably more questions for people that I even have, so where do we go?
Well, you could go to ICI's website, ICI.org, and we have a 401k resource page that has FAQs about 401k plans. Also, some research showing how folks have used these plans, the, you know, kinds of account balances they have, the kinds of investments that they're holding, and a bit about the plans themselves.
Great. And if, even if you're not working and you're self-employed, there are plans you can get into anyway, even if you have your own small business, I would imagine.
Yes, if you are self-employed, you can set up a plan for yourself, and anyone who doesn't have a plan at work can always contribute to an IRA.
Very good. Hey, great information, Sarah. Thank you so much today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
Ain't always easy these days to know what to give your kids for snacks. Sugary this, high fructose that. Heck, even the stuff they call natural ain't always natural. But there's one snack when your kids ask for it, you know exactly what you're giving them.
I want Piggy Parts. I want Piggy Parts.
Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Parts are 100% all-natural salt-preserved pig parts. What parts, you ask? Well, some folks would call them scraps or ears or hoofs, but kids just call them delicious. And with their stiff, leathery texture, one Professor Parker's preserved Piggy Part will last a kid all afternoon. That's what we call value. So stock up now for school. You'll find them at the end of the pet food aisle in original, barbecue, or vinegar, garlic, teriyaki, onion, habanero, pineapple flavor. Give them a try and you'll see why kids say,
That's some good piggies.
Professor Parker's Preserve Piggy Parts.
Tasty stuff, by the way. I have six of them every day. We're out of time.
Out of time.
But I'll be back again tomorrow with another show. That's a threat. So please join me then. In the meantime, have something to eat, take a shower, perhaps a bath. Set up some little candles along the bathtub. Fill the water with your favorite bathing oil. And then relax to the sound of my voice as you listen to a show while you bathe. If that ain't wonderful, I don't know what is. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.